Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kendall Roden, Cynthia Krang, Kale Teeter, Evan Vasilik, Russell Young, and Sajid DeMello discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please visit our website at azpodcast.com.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 252, being recorded on the 24th of October, 2018, with special guest Stuart Vera. I'm Sajid, and on Skype with me, I have Cynthia, Kendall, Kale, and of course, our special guest, Stuart. And but before we get give Stuart a chance to introduce himself and give us some, you know, interesting advice on how he does DevOps at his customer, let's just do a quick roundup on the Azure space. But before that, Cynthia, I believe you did you introduce Stuart to our show to bring him on? How do you know Stuart?
The project with our financial customer came up that we wanted to talk about it. I reached out to them, and they recommended that Stuart would be a great person to talk about it. And I also got to see him during Ready a couple months ago.
Well, that's good. Thanks. So let's get started on the updates. And anybody, you guys want to pick anyone from there?
I got a couple I put out there. One of the ones that's big is the Azure Availability Zones. So this is a feature that we introduced a few months back. I think it went GA, but it's been in private preview for some time. It essentially allows better distribution of your resources across Azure so that you can avoid outages. So it's just another layer of granularity when you're setting up your HA or your DR type environments. And the announcement here is that it's expanded to new regions and some new services there. So it's probably good to go take a look at the blog post. Tom Keene, our CVP, had basically put a blog post out about this. And so basically, the additional regions are in North Europe and West US too.
Yeah, and just remind our listeners, so availability zones, I believe this is multiple data centers within a specific region, correct?
So if you think about it. So if you think about it from a high level, there's regions, and I think we have 54 different regions globally now. But inside of those regions, there's data centers, which are physical buildings. And then inside of those are obviously servers and storage networks and all kinds of things. And so basically, when you get down to that lowest level, like, okay, I'm in the east region, let's say, for instance, there's a bunch of buildings over there. And so being able to distribute, you know, assets or resources across different buildings, obviously there's a layer there if the whole region goes offline, but a building could potentially have an issue. And so being able to tag resources so that they're basically distributed between different buildings is also important.
Mm. That's a good one. Yep. All right. I have I like this one on the named entity recognition in cognitive services. I think this is a pretty nice feature that they come up, and it's just a public preview right now. And what it is, you know, cognitive services, you can give it a like a, you know, there's a number of different facilities in there, but one of them is where you give them a text file and they can extract some information out of that text file. Now you could, it could even extract things like, you know, names, quantities, you know, specific entities, types of information that you would find useful. So you could think of, you know, taking unstructured data. Just think about, you know, you're just reading tweets, right? And you want to get some some interesting information out of those tweets. That this new service, which is in preview now, will help you do that. You know, it can extract certain nuggets of information out of things like location. I mentioned quantity, date, times, you know, emails, URLs, things like that. It can extract them from the text. What else do you guys like here? What's this thing about the Azure update? Azure Update Management. Anybody know about that one?
Yeah, this is relatively new to me. I found this link out there in our blog. And I thought it was an interesting thing because I haven't seen this before, but I think maybe this is one we probably need to dive deeper in, and we'll try to maybe get someone from that team on the podcast here in the future, because it seems pretty important. You know, that I remember back a long time ago, Windows, when we had like Windows Update Server and SUSE and all these other things to basically make sure that our stuff was being patched and updated, but in a controlled manner. This feels similar to that. So I don't know a ton of detail about it yet. So I was thinking that maybe we should dive deeper on this, but there's definitely a nice write up out here from a high level of how this actually works, and you know, how you can orchestrate scripts and inclusions, exclusions, things like hotfixes and things like that on machines, and also reboot control, which is pretty important. I know a lot of enterprise are very kind of aware. So we talk about things being stateless and machines being cattle, and they just go down and we have new ones come up, and we can definitely orchestrate that and make that work. But in an enterprise scenario, especially financial, that we're going to talk about here today, they're very kind of closely tied to those resources. And even if they do go down, it's fine. They just need to be aware of like what's going on and make sure that they can control the limited chaos that's going on there.
Yeah, and it sounds like you know, one of the nice things about this update is that it lets you control when you get the updates. Right? That's always been the biggest pain point. Like nobody wants an update at 10 o'clock in the morning, right? Let's face it, that's when business is hot. So this kind of this gives you that flexibility to specify some of the windows when your VMs or cloud services or whatever it is that you're using get the update. And so that hopefully that'll give our customers a little more peace of mind that they can they're not going to get updated during heavy business hours. Cool, Cynthia. Sorry, I cut you off earlier. You were going to say something.
Oh yeah, there's a new piece that I just put in. That ExpressRoute is now available for Azure DevOps. So again, going back to like financial services or government, there has been some concerns about directly using Azure DevOps because everything is exposed to the internet. But now that there's an option of using ExpressRoute while utilizing Azure DevOps, so if anyone is interested, they're now able to utilize it now with more security of a dedicated ExpressRoute.
Very cool. That's a nice update. Thank you. All right. So I think that's a good roundup for the week. Let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Stuart. Stuart, thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us what you're passionate about in the Azure space and what you'd like to talk to us about today.
Sure. So, hi, everyone. My name is Stuart Vieira. I'm currently a consultant at Microsoft, specializing in Azure. I've been working for almost 3 years and a half. Azure has been my focus since day one. And it's actually very interesting, because I like to tell other people, when I joined Microsoft and I was told that I was going to focus on Azure, I had zero idea what Azure was. I had very vague knowledge, and I wasn't really sure why I got placed on that specific technology. But as the first couple of months passed by, I quickly realized that I was in the right place. I really had a lot of joy exploring all the different things that you can do in Azure. And it's something that I never even thought about, but now has become one of my best areas of exploration. And the reason for it is that Azure is so big, so vast, and pretty much there's always something new. So you can never feel bored because there's always new things to learn. And since I started working in my role, I liked to be sort of like the guinea pig person. So whenever we have new things coming up that a lot of people don't know how to use or how to leverage, I like to try to be that one person who says, hey, I'll learn it. I'll check it out. I'll report back findings. And one of the first things that I started when I was working on Azure was automation. Specifically, like 3 years ago, we were just starting to have the use of ARM templates. It was something that not a lot of people understood how to use or what they were for, specifically because for a lot of people, PowerShell was the way to go. But it was pretty interesting to explore the whole idea of infrastructure as code and how templates have like a lot of usability and a lot of good things that come with them. And I feel like that has opened to new areas like DevOps. So right now, DevOps is one of the areas that I've focused the most. I feel like DevOps is definitely something that everyone who's working in the cloud, not specifically Azure, but any cloud, is definitely something that we need to embrace because it's the way to go on building things in the cloud.
That's great. Now, I mean, I know you said you've been like, you know, doing Azure really hard for the last 3 years. If you were to take a kind of a guess, put a number at, you know, how much percentage of the total Azure resources out there do you think you have familiarity with now over the 3 years? Just a number. Is it 25%, 50%, 75%? What do you think?
Well, I want to say that maybe I've touched 25% of them, and at the same time, I feel like that sounds like a very generous number because every week there's something new. So right. I don't even know what the exact number of Azure services are there right now, but they change and new things come up every day. Yeah. So yeah, 25% probably.
I'm with you. I'm probably at 10% actually, but I know you're kind of all over the place. If, you know, you know you're involved with Kubernetes and other things as well, containers. So you kind of get around. So tell us about this. You know, in the DevOps space, how do you see DevOps? You know, being useful for, let's say, financial services customers. I know you're working with one right now. Obviously, they're big customers, very, very, touchy about compliance, security, things like that. So just give us a feel for how the Azure DevOps system helps them.
Yeah, so one of the first things that I've noticed with a lot of customers, regardless of what they're trying to achieve, whether it's building a new application, migrating their data center applications to the cloud, storing data, whatever the reason is. One of the very first issues that they always tend to have is having a consensus between their ops people and their developers. I've always gone to meetings where I see developers trying to impose themselves because they feel like they are constrained by the decisions made by ops. Then at the same time, ops feel like, oh, like we need to do all these security things, but they do not keep in mind that the actual people that are going to use it are the developers. So it's been a struggle that I've noticed with a lot of customers. And I feel like DevOps is something that can help to mitigate that, because the idea of DevOps is being able to integrate both the ops and the dev side, where whatever the ops people are doing are actually effective for what the developers are doing. And then the developers also feel less constrained by the decisions made by the operations people. So that's one of the first things that I feel like brings a lot of value when discussing DevOps. The other one is also the efficiency on how we build things in the cloud. Something that a lot of operations people don't see or sometimes they'll be blinded about is that when you start developing things in the cloud, you little by little are starting to adapt certain tasks that normally they used to be dev tasks. So it's no longer the day of, oh, I'm going to procure this hardware and I'm going to configure it. Like, that's my job. Now that all these things are pre-configured and they are all sitting in the cloud, it's more of, oh, I need to write a script to build something in the cloud, or I need to write a template. And something that it has become hard for operations people is actually how to manage change. Developers don't have this issue because they've been doing this for a while. Like, I write code, they have source control, they have things like change management, artifacts. And that's something that operations people need as well, but they are not fully aware. So when we have customers building things in the cloud, they'll write scripts, they'll write templates, but then where are these files? there in someone's computer. If someone needs to do a change to something in the cloud, they'll create their own PowerShell script, do the change. No one is aware of the change. If someone needs to build something upon that change, they don't have that. They have to recreate everything. So a lot of these things become harder and more complex to manage. And I feel like that's where things like Azure DevOps can provide a lot of help, because being able to provide source control into the different things that we write in order to build components in the cloud is something very important. And for this financial customer specifically that I am working with, we have a full stack of, I don't know, like 20 plus different Azure services that they all contribute a little piece towards building this specific application that they've been working on for like the past year or two. And it's a lot to manage. So we have a lot of changes coming up, specifically as we introduce new services that causes on the infrastructure side new changes. Also, as developers start to create new features, they might say, hey, we are now trying to introduce search. We want customers in this application to be able to search data. So we want to leverage Azure Search. We want to leverage SQL. We want to leverage whatever other service. Now, infrastructure people need to be able to introduce that into their scope, but then be able to also manage it, taking into account that as developers write new code or write new features, these infrastructure components might change. So to do that, Azure DevOps and DevOps in general has provided a lot of benefits, being able to control what we do, provide visibility. Developers know what infrastructure people are doing. Infrastructure people know what developers are doing. And then there's more cohesiveness in the way that we're making decisions on how to build things.
That's awesome. Stuart, I'm also very passionate about DevOps myself, but I'm curious, when you're working with such a big customer, like how do you start building all the different pieces and how do you make sure that they're all orchestrated and that they all work together?
Yeah.
While the development is going on too.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And as part of the whole idea of leveraging DevOps, there's also the component of how exactly we're managing the project. So I know that specifically on the infrastructure side, many people might not do this. And also some customers might say they do it, but they don't really do it. And that's the whole idea of leveraging agile delivery. So in terms of project management, a lot of developers are keen or know how to follow agile practices. But I've noticed that a lot of people on the infrastructure side do not, because they don't see themselves as developers. So they don't understand like the whole idea of agile delivery. But being able to follow agile delivery is something that can provide that whole structure of who's doing what and by when. And products like Azure DevOps knows that. That's why if you explore Azure DevOps within the Azure Boards component, the entire component of Azure Boards is built upon the foundations of agile delivery. So within our project, we pretty much run on sprints. So we have 3 week long sprints. Every beginning of the sprint, everyone will meet in order to voice their opinion of what is the work that needs to be prioritized for the next 3 weeks. So we all sit down to discuss what new features are the developers building, which then what do infrastructure members need to contribute towards developers for that. So if next sprint developers are going to build the new search function, then that means the infrastructure now needs to create Azure Search for them. So we sit down to discuss what they are doing and how we can contribute. And then out of that, we use Azure DevOps components like user stories. We write user stories where we will describe what exactly is the ask and what is it for and what are the expectations. So 3 weeks when the sprint ends, what are we expecting to see? Like, we're expecting to see a fully functional Azure DevOps instance running in our environment and be able to talk to this specific app service. So once we do that, we just task out things. So we will create a different task of what do we need to do this. So for example, we need someone to write PowerShell modules out of the Azure Search REST API to deploy this. We need to create an ARM template to deploy Azure Search. Like all those different components will task to different members in the team. And then that way we can track who's doing what and for what purpose. And then, like I said before, it provides that visibility for both the operations people and the developers to know who's doing what and for what and by when.
Hey, Stuart, I was curious, typically, what's the ratio of developers and ops people that you see in these large teams?
Yeah, so it is very dependent on what exactly is the focus of the project. My project right now is very app dev focused since the customer is trying to build a brand new application. So definitely we have more developers than we have infrastructure people since we have multiple developers teams associated to specific features of the application. So within the application, we have multiple features. So it's very app dev focused. So definitely the bigger ratio is on the app dev people.
So it's
side.
Like 4:1, 5:1, like what is the...
5:1, probably. Okay. 5 developers, 1 infrastructure person. But now, one of the things that I've been trying to voice internally with other people is that right now, this methodology is being followed by a lot of the app dev focused projects, but they're not really followed by the infrastructure focused projects. So while there are some customers that are running infrastructure focused projects and they are leveraging DevOps, it is not yet like the main way to deliver the work with other customers. So I know that there's other people that agree with me that there needs to be an emphasis to promote people to, hey, even if your project is infrastructure focused, that does not mean that you could follow the DevOps methodology. You can still leverage DevOps even though your project is just infrastructure people.
You know, I was having a discussion with my customer on this just the other day, yesterday actually, and we were thinking that for infrastructure style projects, right, something like Kanban is better suited versus say Scrum for that we would typically use for dev projects. Do you guys settle on a specific methodology for your projects? How do you come to that realization that this particular methodology works best for you?
Well, so the reason why we leverage Agile is because the whole idea of having sprints really helps to provide that good way of tracking the work of everyone. And I know with discussions with some Azure architects and some other consultants that there's also an emphasis to possibly kind of imitate that within the way that they deliver Azure projects. And one of the main things that everyone talks about is the idea of a sprint zero. So sprint zero would be like that first set of weeks where you do the whole preparation of what the actual project is going to deliver. So for example, let's say we're going to migrate legacy applications into containers inside AKS. That's what the project is going to be. So the idea would be to have a sprint zero where we will kind of introduce what the technologies are, prepare, make sure that we have all the prerequisites of what we're going to do, like any pre-analysis, like anything that is considered pre within that scope of the engagement before you actually do the work. And then you can say, okay, we're going to, based on what we're going to achieve, we might say, okay, we're going to have 2-week sprints. The first week sprint, we're going to analyze all the applications and write the Docker files. For the next sprint, we're gonna stand up AKS and configure AKS. For the third sprint, we're gonna start pushing all the containers into AKS. And then the last sprint, we're just gonna test that everything is working fine and then finalize the project. So that way it makes it a better way for both the team who is doing the work and for the customer to know how are we doing along the project. Versus a lot of projects tend to follow sort of a waterfall method where we're just waiting till the end to know like what's going on. And sometimes we run into issues because of that. So being able to manage it that way provides a better visibility on how the project is managed. And then at the same time, by leveraging tools like Azure DevOps, one of the things that we're trying to fix is that what happens once the project ends and then customers need to continue on their own. That's one of the things that we're trying to tackle, because a lot of customers, once the project has ended, they find themselves in a space where they're like, we do not know what to do next. Like right now, customers just say, yeah, like project has finished. What we needed, it's in Azure, but we do not know how to recreate or how to continue, because all we have are these scripts that they wrote and some templates, nothing else. So if we could actually leverage things like Azure DevOps, then the customers say like, hey, we actually have our code source. We know where everything is. Everyone in the who's part of the team and the customer side can look at it, have access. They know what's going on. And if we set up things like pipelines, then they can recreate like, hey, we can now build this again in another subscription for another department on our own, because everything is already set for us to, versus just having some files on someone's computer.
That's good. That's very good perspective. Thank you. So what are some of the kind of problems that you've seen, with Azure DevOps that you've had to use some creative solutions to fix? So I'm sure, like, you know, dealing with a big team like this, multiple work streams going on, is it the perfect tool, or is it things that you have to do to kind of, you know, make things work the way you want to?
Well, one of the things that we always need to think about is exactly the flow on how we're deploying things. So as you create pipelines, pipelines run in an iterative way. So pretty much step one, step two, step three, and onwards. And you really need to understand what are the dependencies of the different services that you're trying to leverage within your deployment are, and be able to accurately place them in the right order for deployment. So for example, if I'm planning to use an app service environment that it's private and is assigned to a VNet, I cannot deploy that app service before that VNet has been created. So when that's something that needs to be planned and be properly managed to avoid issues. And then the other thing that sometimes can become an issue is as people introduce changes or add new things, it can create problems for the deployment if you have not properly configured your pipelines for those changes. So like, for example, someone updates a script and now we're introducing a new parameter value for whatever new configuration we're doing, and someone forgot to update Azure DevOps that new value exists, your pipeline might break because the value is not there, doesn't know what to do. So things like that is something that you can run into. But definitely as you start using it more and more, you are aware of this thing. So you know, like, okay, if I'm going to introduce a new change, not only I need to go and change this script, I also go and need to change my pipeline to introduce the existence of this new value. I need to be able to provide what that value is. So there are definitely things that you need to learn as you're starting to use this kind of product. But it's common. Like, a lot of people run into issues like that. But it's just pretty much trying to become self-aware of not only you are doing changes to your code and your files, but you also need to make the correct changes to your actual deployment pipelines to ensure that you build correctly in your Azure environment.
Good. All right. Well, Cale, since there are any more questions for Stuart? I know he's given us a lot of information already.
No, I think this was great, Stuart. Really, thank you for coming on here and talking about this. And I think the other important point is you kind of do this day to day. So the real world aspect of that you bring to the table was really important. I think our listeners will appreciate it.
And I'm happy to share that. By all means, one of my hopes is that more and more people start to get interest on leveraging the product. VSTS, as it used to be named, has been there already for a while. And I am a believer that a lot of people shied away from it because they thought like, oh, that's just like some other tool that it's part of Visual Studio, must be an app dev tool, we don't need it. By all means, I think that the rebranding to Azure DevOps was a great move because at the end of the day, it is an Azure product. and it is intended to improve your Azure deployments. So I hope that more and more people start to gather the interest to go and learn it and start using it for their deployments versus just writing scripts locally. And for those who might be listening, and if you're leveraging more than just Azure, Azure DevOps has extensive integration with a lot of other tools. So don't feel that if you're using Azure DevOps, then you are constrained to Microsoft Stack. There's integration with all sorts of other open source tools like Docker, Kubernetes, Terraform, Ansible, Jenkins. You can use it with other clouds like Google Cloud and AWS. It's amazing how much you can do in Azure DevOps and how much you can implement with it.
I completely agree. And I think the more you use it, the more you find out that, oh, I didn't know that Azure DevOps could do this too. And there's actually a huge push for using Azure DevOps for a lot of open source. So there's also a lot of free minutes and free things around open source if you were to utilize Azure DevOps. And something we always try to tell customer is that Azure DevOps helps you put everything in one place, because you start from the Git repos that you have your code hosted in, and then it goes all the way until it gets deployed to all the different Azure services. So if you don't want to switch between multiple tools, most of the things you want to do could be achieved in one place.
Yeah, I agree on that. Versus using GitHub and Jenkins or multiple of tools, Azure DevOps can provide you all that. And of course, I don't think I mentioned this, but just to reiterate, just like any other Microsoft product, Azure DevOps was built with security on mind. So just like you can assign RBAC in Azure, you have RBAC in in Azure DevOps. You can control who does what, who has access to what. By all means, all that integration with other products is present.
Awesome. Well, this has been really great, guys. Thank you so much for sharing all that with us, with our listeners. And Stuart, if you have any, your favorite resources, links, etc., regarding Azure DevOps that you want to share with our listeners, send them to me. I'll put them along with the show notes with this podcast.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Great. Well, thank you again.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.